Right, and we're live. Hello, everybody. Good afternoon and welcome to, I believe, the sixth or seventh edition of the Zach Hub podcast. Today, we have a really exciting guest. We have Josh Swihart, who is the Senior Vice President of Growth, Product Strategy, and Regulatory Relations at the Electric Coin Company. Josh, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you, Ian?
I'm doing just fine. And I think this is probably a good opportunity. We put out a tweet last week and we said that this episode is going to be around Zcash FUD. And I think this is probably a good opportunity to put out a disclaimer. We both work for the Electric Coin Company, you know, one of the recipients of the Zcash Dev Fund, responsible for a lot of development on Zcash. So just want to put that out there so people are aware that we both work there. Is there anything that you want to add to that?
No, this should be fun. There's no shortage of Zcash FUD, so maybe we can create some more while we're here.
Yeah, we probably can. And there was a great tweet yesterday that went out. I think his name's Adam Cochran from the Ethereum community. He said, well, if I was a government agent, I would put out as much Zcash FUD as possible so people wouldn't use it. So that's kind of like the gist of what he said, I think.
Well, it's not... It's like that tactic is a true tactic, right? Is disinformation, kind of the idea of kind of taking control of the narrative, moving into places like whether Twitter or forums or where places are and kind of hijacking everything. So we've certainly seen that with Zcash over the years. There's not been a shortage of those kinds of tactics, I think, in the community, the group of people that are kind of around Zcash. So.
No, I totally get it. And yeah, this is going to be awesome. So I think a good way to start before we dive into a lot of the FUD, we received a lot of questions from community members. And I also did a scan of just like various like searches on the internet, seeing what people are saying. I think a good way to start this is actually, you know, just providing the audience some context. You know, I know you, a lot of Zcashers know you, but you know, what is your role at like the Electric Coin Company and how did you originally get into Zcash and get interested in working at ECC?
I won't tell you the whole story because it's a long story in terms of how I got here. But in terms of my role, so I have like a responsibility for externally facing functions. So most of that's focused on education and communications, our alliances and partnership work, what we're doing with kind of our product marketing and the products that ECC specifically develops and makes available to the community as part of our contribution to the Zcash ecosystem, regulatory and policy relations, things like that. So most of that work anymore. When I started, we had a very, very small team. We have got a much stronger team today than we did then. So mostly it's supporting my team doing all those functions versus me doing a lot of that stuff directly.
Okay, very cool.
How I got in, just real quickly. At one point I was actually working on various things that's kind of documented elsewhere that related to being able to use data and people's information, information we collect from different kind of sensors and sources to be able to kind of assess what people might be doing or what they might be thinking. And so that really opened my eyes to the possibilities. And then and kind of this kind of scary kind of notion of where we're headed as a world, as a human race. And then when I get into crypto, then, you know, that coupled with the desire for things like decentralization, where I had been censored or shut down from some remittances that I was attempting. And some kind of interest in kind of alternative mechanisms for capital formation and things like that, that I thought crypto provided. But that all that thing kind of came together. And then I went after what was called the Zcash company then and started knocking on the door to see if Zugo and team would hire me. At one point, I just made a decision. I need to work on this full time. I need to work with this team. And eventually they let me in. It took a little convincing, but eventually they brought me on.
That sounds similar to another person's story of working at ECC. I won't say whose story is that similar to. Yeah.
We know.
We both know. I'm talking about me. Yeah, it took me a while to convince ECC as well, but it's working out from what I can understand. So I think that's a really good story. I think also that perspective of like, you can see the other side of the world and like the other side of the direction, like where this can go. And I think that gives like, I think that's a strength, right? People can have this perspective of like, I know how bad things could potentially be to X, Y, and Z technology. That's why I'm so passionate about working on something that could potentially combat against that. You know, I think that's a really important perspective to have. Let's dive into it. For people, I'm looking over to my screen here. I have a list of questions that were given to us from the Zcash community, had some links into people from other communities within like the privacy space. And then also people from like, you know, the Bitcoin community and Ethereum community also chimed in with some of these questions. So we're going to dive right through them and we're just going to kind of list, you know, just go into the FUD and do our best to dispel it or provide, you know, a different set of context that people might not be familiar with. So let's roll with the first one. Dev fund or dev tax, in what ways has that brought value to Zcash, Zec, the coin, and the Zcash community as a whole?
Yeah, this is a great question. And it's like when Zuko talks about it, he talks about it like in terms of being one of our superpowers and our meaning the Zcash community. And we've seen other projects actually try to replicate it in various forms in terms of funding. So if you're not familiar with the kind of the funding model or this kind of quote unquote dev fund, what we call a dev fund, some people have called a dev tax, that are really kind of fudding it. The Zcash community has voted on a fund that started in 2020 and runs through 2024. Before that, there was something called the Founders Reward, which there was kind of a similar mechanism, but the mechanism that's in place for Zcash right now is that Zcash is a proof of work chain. And rather than like with Bitcoin, 100% of the mining reward goes to the miners and they have in exchange for electricity, providing a service to, you know, secure and operate the network. With Zcash, 80% goes to the miners. And then there's 8% that goes to a grants organization that's not affiliated with ECC. And it's independently run. Although it is like legally tied to the Zcash Foundation, they don't take an active role in managing it. And then 7% of the mining rewards comes to ECC and 5% goes to the Zcash Foundation, which is separate 501c3. So there has been this question of, like what is necessary, like what, and I think Vitalik has raised it, right? Is like, what's the necessary amount of money needed to be able to secure and operate a network? And is 80% of the Zcash mining rewards enough? I don't know, it seems to be. So like we have not had any kind of rollbacks or replay attacks or things like that within Zcash since this has been in place. And some form of this again has been in place since the outset. So seems to be working. There again, like no outages or anything like that. The idea with the funding is that this actually creates a more optimal solution by providing funding mechanisms. So it aligns the incentives of ZEC holders, coin holders, and the developer community. There's this thing called it's the tragedy of the commons, which people are probably familiar with, but if you're not, essentially, like a common is a common resource that everybody shares and gets to participate in. And, you know, often that's like we think of infrastructure, so roads and bridges and things like that. Natural resources, another one, so trees and animals and things like that that everybody, as a human, you know, born into this earth, can enjoy. But the idea with tragedy of commons is that while it's a resource that we all need, everybody kind of participates selfishly. And it makes sense, right? It's like, if I have my family to feed, then I'm going to fish and I'm going to maybe catch more than I need to catch in order to like sell it at the market and do some other things. And other families might have similar needs in order to feed their family. But that might result in overfishing. in a particular area. So the tragedy of the commons is where that common resource is actually can be depleted because of that kind of quote unquote selfishness. So similarly with like with software, we've seen that happen where open source software gets out there, but there aren't mechanisms to kind of fund it, and everybody takes and they kind of use it for what they need, but they don't necessarily contribute back. So this funding mechanism is different. So as part of the ZEC that we receive, you know, the amount of funding that we receive in terms of fiat, which is what we have to pay our bills in, unfortunately, is in US dollars. So we have to think about how to manage a treasury, and what we can do or not do is tied to the value of ZEC. So if the coin price goes up, then we have more money to do more education and to try to drive more adoption. If we have less, then we have less. And so that's a kind of a nice incentive alignment between the ZEC coin holders and those of us that are being paid. You know, effectively, we're being paid by the, you know, by the community, by those ZEC holders through this kind of inflation through the mining rewards. We had, interestingly enough, I mean, there's been various times where we looked at different funding mechanisms. So when we weren't sure there was going to be a dev fund, you know, some years ago, we talked to various kind of investors and we're thinking about talking to, you know, potentially bringing on funding. And there was questions about the valuation of ECC and how much money we might raise. But the problem with all of those things is that it skews the incentives, right? So a VC is operating on behalf of their LPs, their limited partners, and they have an expectation of profit. So extracting essentially value potentially for the from the network, and they may not have the same kind of time preferences. So they may have a desire to be able to, you know, get a profit within 5 years or 10 years if it's a longer time horizon. But the ZEC holder, you know, the decisions in order for them to like maximize the profit are different necessarily, or maybe different than the motives or the needs of the coin holders. So that this model, so we decided not to take money, though we could, which actually made it harder for us to continue to, because we could have taken a lot more money than we get in ZEC. But we felt that that alignment was really, really important. So. Again, I think this is it gets fudded. It's funny it gets fudded, I think, because people don't think about it in terms of first principles, and they kind of just rush to some conclusions about these entities extracting or greed or things like that. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's really all about incentive alignment.
What do you think about? I want to touch on one more thing because it's something I think about when we talk about the Dev Fund. What do you think about sustainability in terms of like being able to sustainably develop on the protocol and maybe not be worried about those outside influences? Do you think the Dev Fund has any influence, positive or negative, on sustainability for the Zcash protocol and Zcash development?
Yeah, that's a great point. Absolutely. Because, you know, the things that we're working on and things that our other people are working on within the Zcash ecosystem allows for Zcash to evolve and not ossify. And I know there's people that, you know, they'll argue like, you know, Bitcoin should ossify, for example, and it needs to ossify in order to be a universal, whatever store value or, you know, whatever narrative is being bandied around. And so I totally understand that perspective. Within the Zcash community, I think there's a general belief that ossification isn't right for what it is that we're trying to build. So we're trying to build this kind of broad economic freedom around the world. There's things that are moving, changing all the time. Technology is moving and changing. And the reality is like the cryptography that we're working with is very, very sophisticated. And you know, there's so much that has been done with zero knowledge and zero knowledge cryptography across the industry, which has been fantastic, which, you know, a little bit of not so humble brag, right? That started at ECC with the stuff that we're building on Zcash. But it's got a long way to go, right? There's a lot of work that has to be done on scalability and performance, you know, being able to support various kinds of devices and things like that. So There's a lot of work that needs to be done. If there wasn't funding to be able to do it, things would ossify and or be completely captured by self-interested parties. So that's a great point.
No. Yeah, that's a really good point. So awesome. We've covered that aspect of it, the dev fund. I think we dove into that relatively good there. I want to shift gears now and talk about regulatory relations. So there is a lot of, within certain circles, specifically in crypto, there's some hesitancy to engage with regulators because of the belief that they might not have the community's best interest in heart. And that has turned into a bit of FUD about Zcash, because Zcash does engage with regulators. And some people have called it a Fed coin or a Gov coin. So want to dive a little bit more into, you know, why does ECC specific, because ECC specifically or Zcash as a whole, obviously the ZF board has a few, people who work in that public policy space as well. How does the community think about engaging with regulators? Why does it do it? And why is it important? And why is it not a negative?
So Ian, when you say, like, people say that it's like a Gov coin or a Fed coin, what do you think they mean?
So this is funny, because we brought up earlier with the tweet yesterday from the Ethereum person, like, wouldn't the government not want people to use Zcash because, you know, of it is like Z to Z transactions arguably are the most private form of transaction within terms of like digital payments. So I find it interesting when people talk about GovCoin, I think it's just like this, people refer to maybe companies and Zcash cozying up to regulators and building the protocol to their wishes. Maybe that's the FUD I think that comes with it. That's probably, you know, if a regulator came to us and had like a request, right? Like, or came to the Zcash community, like, does that relationship then allow regulators to influence the direction of the protocol? I would imagine that's like what the FUD is around.
Yeah. Okay. So I think, you know, what's interesting there is like, one is there's like this underlying assumption in with anybody that maybe has that perspective that you've shared, that Zcash is somehow kind of centralized and that a government entity can somehow influence this open source community project, public good. So it can't, but they have made requests. So we can touch on that. So it can understand why people might be led or kind of conjecture that way, but it couldn't be kind of further from the truth. So we're working on behalf of stakeholders, as I mentioned, our incentives are aligned. The chain, you know, and the project and what we're trying to do, we would completely fail. Like, our life's work would be a failure if it's captured by a government. That's like, to the core, I think that is for people that are participating in the Zcash ecosystem, believe that to be true. That can be done, you know, the government, if they're going to create a CDBC or whatever they're going to do, that could be the Fed coin, but there's no interest and no tolerance for it. And even if the government approached one of the entities within the Zcash community to go do something, they wouldn't be successful because other entities wouldn't comply and or somebody fork chain or something like that. So that said, like, we do have people that are working on kind of regulatory things and policy things. So in ECC specifically, and on my team, there's two individuals that do this full time. One is Paul Brigner, who works on U.S. policy and coalition building in Washington, D.C. And the other is Gary Weinstein, who heads up our global kind of regulatory activity. So I can describe a little bit what they do. So Paul, part of what Paul does is, which I think is brilliant, and he's done a brilliant job at it, is coalition building within Washington, D.C. And that's pulling together various voices from both sides of the aisle, from conservatives and progressives, from think tanks, with universities and academics, research institutions, you know, a lot of folks on the Hill that are, you know, staffers and others that have significant influence and voice in the policies that get created. And even that, you know, the regulatory community within Washington, D.C. And the things that we're advocating for are like these kind of, it's not just like, it's not advocating for Zcash somehow, right? Or advocate trying to shill the token or get somebody to say the token's name, you know, on C-SPAN or something like that. Really, the focus is on these kind of core rights that we're really focused on that are part of our mission at ECC. And I think broadly believed within the Zcash community at large. And those rights are related to our privacy protections, that privacy is, that it is normal, but it's also a human right. And it's necessary for personal security. It's necessary for business security to be, businesses to be able to operate. We saw this with the first crypto wars in the 1990s, that privacy and encryption was necessary in order to conduct business on the internet. Same with digital coins, digital commerce, and even national security. So to the extent that there's no privacy, then either that is completely transparent and open to foreign governments that may wish US harm, or is completely hackable because it's sitting in a database somewhere. And we've shown time and time again, nothing, everything is hackable. There's nothing that can be completely protected. So that's what we spend some time on. There's others like policy related things like self-sovereignty, being able to access, that runs into like self-hosted wallets and things like DeFi. But that's the advocacy work that Paul is doing in Washington, D.C. And of course, that benefits Zcashers, because Zcashers then have access under, you know, good policy and good regulation. And then with regulatory, we work on a couple different fronts. So Gary, again, has a global focus. So he's got to look at things not specific to the US, but what's happening with MiCA in Europe, what's happening with, you know, Payments Act in Singapore, with MAS, and working with GFSA in Japan, and, you know, kind of understanding what's going on with FATF, who the players are, what the thinking is. Some of it has to do with, you know, some of it is work related to education. Some of it's relationship building and trust, because people, like it or not, have perceptions about, you know, crypto people and whether it's for good or whether it's used for evil. And so combating some of that FUD within the regulatory ranks, trying to keep doors open to make sure that those doors don't get slammed shut. So that we, you know, the longer that we survive, the more chance that we have of this being really transformative globally. And then he also works with like exchanges and other folks within the ecosystem to better understand regulation that impacts Zcash and the things that exchanges or other third parties might do to be able to kind of best support the token and best support or best kind of protect themselves in whatever kind of jurisdiction they're in. Okay. The thing I mentioned earlier, like requests. So, and I think I shared some of this stuff publicly before, but there have been multiple requests from multiple agencies and groups within the US who have suggested that it would be better if Zcash had a backdoor or some kind of mechanism that would allow them to surveil. So they'll say, you know, we believe that privacy is necessary for national security. It's just privacy from, you know, it's privacy against surveillance by other foreign actors, but we're okay. We're the good guys. And so we're not the baddies. And so there should be some mechanism to allow us to view that information. And like, of course, again, like that's not even possible. And we've been very clear about where our position is and the impossibility of doing anything anyway, even if they were to try. That's part of some of those conversations that we have.
And do you think, like, with regards to that request specifically, do you find that would even have potentially negative implications on national security from an American perspective?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, it's like, who's going to hold the keys, right? And There's all kinds of things, right? So even if you believe everybody in a particular jurisdiction, let's just say the U.S. government, and if you believe everybody in the U.S. government is pure as driven snow and can't be compromised, can't be bribed, can't be put under duress to kind of reveal information, even if the controls are, you believe the controls that could be put in place that don't allow for that, it still becomes like it's the honeypot, right? We've seen time and time again where, whether it's Russia or China or North Korea, very sophisticated actors being able to get access to US-based systems. So let's say you're taking all of this, you have this information that you're storing, and that information is hacked, and it includes the financial history of all US, of all American citizens, of all US businesses. That's tremendously valuable information. And so we just can't put that at risk. But we also know not every actor participating in a government system is pure as a driven snow, and that those things can be compromised. And so, and we know that, unfortunately, like we've seen in our own history, right, within the United States. So we've gone through these times where to like protest against slavery or for the rights of women or for, you know, all of these various rights over time, at one point, these values that we have and these things that we think are true and good of our society today weren't always perceived to be. It took people who needed to be able to correspond and engage privately in order to make progress, even in the founding, in the very founding of our country. It's part of our fabric that we need access outside of even what we perceive to be a friendly government's eye, watchful eye, in order to help affect meaningful change that ultimately benefit us in the long term.
I would completely agree with that. And I think kind of to add on to that, like, you know, Americans have, you know, constitutional rights to anonymous assembly and anonymous donations. So I think with regards to anonymous or private transactions or confidential transactions, I think, you know, the constitutional rights extend that far as well. So really excited to like continue to follow a lot of the work that people are doing in the policy and regulatory space, because as much as I might hold very like eclectic political views, I do think overall it's a positive because it's giving, you know, people within certain jurisdictions the right to use these things freely. And I think that's something to be protected and very worthwhile. So awesome. Shifting gears again. So we are now shifting away from FedCoin regulatory relation policy FUD. We are now moving to Zcash privacy, something that is not as simple of an answer, I think, because I feel like the two previous topics we've just touched on, DEF fund regulatory stuff, I think are a little bit easier to answer and are just maybe a difference in opinion and difference in value. This is much more complex. So let's dive into a lot of other people, like other communities will say that Zcash is not private because it has transparency support and or transparent address support, and that most people opt to use transparent addresses. So that's one piece of FUD. And then other people through that discredit the value and the privacy of a Z2Z transaction because of that. So let's talk about the various different privacy schemes that are out there, and why and how Zcash kind of fits into that, and kind of dispel the FUD or talk about the FUD of Zcash not being a currency with privacy at its core, and privacy being, you know, the first principle.
Yeah.
Complicated one.
it's a super complicated one, but like, let's go back. We talk about first principles. I mean, let's go back to the, like, what do we mean by private? Because there's no such thing. Meaning that like privacy isn't a binary thing. It's not where either I have privacy or I don't have privacy. There's always some kind of trade-offs, right? So if I close my curtains and turn the light on, right, I'm like still giving some information to somebody that's sitting outside my house as to maybe I'm home, maybe I'm not, and I just have the lights on a timer. I don't know, but I've leaked some kind of information. So even though they can't see what's inside, it's like it's leaky. If I go to a coffee shop and I buy a cup of coffee and I use cold hard US dollars to buy coffee, is that private or not private? Well, like everybody in the coffee shop can see me. They can hear what my order is. They don't necessarily know what my name is unless I tell the person who's writing my name on a cup, but I can give them a different name, whatever. But it's still like leaking, you know, all kinds of private information. If I go to like a buy a bike with somebody on Craigslist and I meet them in the parking lot of a grocery store to exchange the bike, I don't know, I have to know who they are, and they don't have to know like how much my balance is at the bank, but they might know probably how much I'm holding if I'm buying the bike, because that, you know, they're selling the bike for $200. I should have $200 cash with me in order to buy the bike. And then they can see my face. So, and then maybe there's like cameras in the parking lot. So is that a private transaction or is it not a private transaction? If I'm in that same parking lot and I'm buying that bike with Monero, is it a private transaction or not private transaction? So I'd say, well, it's pretty private, but, it's still leaking information. And it gets even more complicated when you get into like digital realms and how you're using technology. So you can get pretty private, but again, like your counterparty is probably your biggest risk of leaking information. But as I mentioned, like at the outset, like that was a whole nother life of mine, was being able to collect information, aggregate that information, create kind of probabilistic models about who people were and what they were doing, in order to try to potentially manipulate outcomes. And so that's all of like digital marketing, right? So that's what happens largely with digital marketing right now. So as it relates to like different schemes within, like for different projects, I know there's like projects in particular that FUD Zcash very heavily. Like, I don't think ill of, you know, most people in the Monero community, but there are people in the Monero community that have done that kind of very vocally. And I feel like it's very disingenuous. And actually, ultimately, we're, you know, in many ways fighting for the same thing. And ultimately, that same thing is consent and choice. So that I, as an individual, have the ability to make a decision as to what information I want to leak when. So if I decide to go to a parking lot and buy a bike for $200, I know that I'm leaking some kind of information, and I'm okay with leaking that information. That's consent. So if I have that consent, that's what we're aiming for. It's like not perfect privacy. And so if people are looking for perfect privacy, it just doesn't exist. Like, it's fairy tale land. And they're selling you a bit of good bill of goods if they're telling you their coin has perfect privacy. It just doesn't. That said, like zero knowledge cryptography, you know, baked into the name, right? It's the most kind of private. I'd say, I don't know, coin or technology available, to the extent that it's not putting any kind of information on the chain about certain things. Right, it still puts information on the chain about that there was a transaction that happened, and there was a transaction that happened that was completely shielded in the Zcash's case, but it doesn't tell you anything about the sender, the receiver. It doesn't give you any transaction history that you can kind of go back through a block explorer and kind of look at the history and see where the coins came from to begin with. So there's fungibility. It doesn't tell you about the, you know, again, the transaction amount or how much somebody has, you know, kind of remaining in their wallet, or any other patterns of past behavior where they might be expecting their next paycheck. And so when the next Zcash is going to flow in, so you can't see any of that information. And it's not a mixer fundamentally. So if you are storing your Zcash in a shielded pool, then that information remains perfectly shielded unless you try to use it. Try to use a shielded pool as a mixer, which you can talk about. But you know, Zcash has best in class cryptography. Other tools are mimicking or using zero knowledge more and more to provide privacy versus using mixing. I think mixing is kind of going out of fashion because there's a recognition that people can still do heuristic analysis and make probabilistic determinations as to what somebody might be doing or who somebody is based upon their behavior and based upon some inherent weaknesses with mixers.
And I think you just mentioned something really important there. I don't think that, and maybe this is not the best opinion or a popular opinion, I don't think that makes like mixers bad, right? Like if you hold a certain amount of Bitcoin and you receive Bitcoin from somebody to an address and you want to put it into your main address and a mixer is the tool that you use there, like I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But I think to call it particularly as private as, say, a Z to Z Zcash transaction, I think that's where I think the issues start to come. And now I'm starting to see even within like other communities, people are starting to acknowledge that. They're like, hey, privacy, you know, money at rest, shielded transactions with from a pool of funds that have been, you know, given a certain amount of time, right, to gain a stronger anonymity set. I think people are even in other communities are starting to come out and say, like, that's probably the most private form of peer-to-peer transactions.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, and again, privacy is a gradient, it's not binary, and people are make decisions about what level of privacy they need, and they may have different kind of preferences or threat models or things like that that drive them to use certain kinds of, you know, solutions. And, you know, in many ways, like without a mixer, you can be somewhat private with Bitcoin, right? You never use the same address, there's like certain behaviors that you use, and it's pseudonymous or whatever, that if you're like trying to be private from, I don't know, your neighbors or somebody that you don't want to see stuff that probably aren't very sophisticated in their ability, then totally fine. If you are, though, concerned about a threat from a state actor with sophisticated tools for surveillance, or you don't want to be marketed to by a company who has a lot of money and sophisticated tools to, you know, the ability to buy sophisticated tools in order to be able to target market to you, then maybe you want something stronger. And so it just depends. It's up to you.
Yeah. I think that aspect of like choice and being able to kind of understand your personal situation, is really important. And let's before we kind of shift to another topic, I want to touch on one more thing, because that is something that people have used to, I guess, FUD against Zcash, is the fact that users have a choice between private and transparent transactions. And they say that when you give people the choice and you give people the opportunity to choose between something, they might mess it up. They might think they're using a shielded TX when they're in reality using a transparent TX or address or transaction, whatever. So what is the kind of, you know, current state around people being able to choose between private and transparent transactions and how that affects their own personal security and whether that's the right approach? What's kind of your thoughts there?
I think the criticism is totally valid. So, and again, by the criticism, I mean that people might get confused. And so it's not that we're that somehow removing their choice is better, but that they may think that something is private when it's not private. I mean, I think we saw this maybe even like Venmo historically, where people don't understand the consequences of the decisions that they're making, the downstream consequences even, where like if you are engaged on various kind of social media activities and you're dropping hints all over the place about what your interests are and that you like going on big cruises or that you just bought a new car, or you might be shopping for a new car or whatever kind of breadcrumbs you drop on the internet, which happens all the time. People think, well, that's a leak of privacy, but, you know, I'm not too worried about another car dealer calling me up or spamming me with something. But they might care that, like, they're wondering why they get very targeted phishing messages, either by their, you know, phone or in their email. And they're not kind of quite sure then, like, I got this thing from PayPal, I got this thing from Visa to log in, and I'm confused. And that's another example where just the pervasiveness of our data leakage and people not understanding the options or even the kind of the stuff that the EU has done with cookies and being able to turn off advertising, like it's still way too complicated. Like I go to like it's like recently got into F1 thanks to Netflix, but Formula One. And you go to like a Formula One site and you look at their cookies, like it's atrocious, right? They got like a gazillion companies that are all looking at your stuff when you're on that site. But it's like a pain to go, and I've got to turn that off every time and all that kind of stuff. So I think that criticism is valid, and I think that criticism is valid broadly because we don't understand the implications of all of our data leakage. And therefore, like when we talk about consent, the person is really not consenting for the phishing attack or for all these advertisers in Formula One to target me. So I think we need better tools, better standards. I think like HTTPS now is now the norm on the internet. I think those like the normalization and improving the usability is important. HTTPS isn't enforced in the protocol, right? It's a method for sending information encrypted, but you could use HTTP. But if I try to do that in my browser today, I get a warning saying, this is insecure, you want to continue? And then that user has the option or is choosing to consent to that that lack of security in their communication. So I think we just need to do a much better job of moving the industry that way with expectations of being able to work with users at at the kind of the user experience level.
Okay. Awesome. Really appreciate that
That might
answer.
not, like, a lot of people may not agree that might not be it,
Yeah, I
but
it's an interest
it's my perspective.
yeah I again it's going to be an ongoing debate for a very long period of time, especially when, let's say, layer twos or different applications on, let's say, something like Ethereum with certain privacy guarantees begin to get used more. Like, is the potential of saying like a data, like let's say I wanted to move money in and out of like an Aztec address through like two different Ethereum mainnet addresses, like are we gonna kind of talk about the privacy risks and data leakage with that specifically, right? So I think it's just gonna have to be this ongoing conversation, and eventually over the course of time, I think people will likely get there and kind of view like I'm gonna have, X amount of money in a shielded wallet, and it's always going to stay there, so I can use it to like buy stuff and have like private transactions. So I think it just time will get us there. Yeah. Shifting again, we have to keep doing this because we're going through that list as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode. Supply auditability, the biggest Zcash concern for a lot of different people out there. Let's talk about, that and within like certain, people like communities like Bitcoin or supply auditability and limited like or anti-inflationary supply at a certain point, 21 million is a really big deal. That's a huge concern with like these coins that have more privacy, is the supply auditability aspect. So let's just kind of dive into that and the response to there for people concerned about that specifically.
Yeah, it is absolutely like sacrosanct for some people within the community. Not all people in the community, right? But there is a group that's really important. And Zcash is, it is a fork of Bitcoin. It has the same tokenomics today. It's 21 million coins, fixed supply, predictable issuance rates with halving. There's a kind of interesting proposal out there to kind of change how issuing works to smooth that curve versus halvings, but that's probably a separate topic. But there is the concern is that like you have again like with Zcash you have these different pools, right? And the pools is kind of it's what we call it, but it's kind of a metaphor. But it's like this it's the type of cryptography that's used for it's different types of cryptography, part of the evolution of cryptography. So the first one was Sapling when Zcash was launched. And then when we made a major kind of cryptographic breakthrough with SAP with or excuse me with Sprout, and then with Sapling, which was a major cryptographic breakthrough in 2018, people started using that cryptography. And so the coins using that cryptography are in the considered to be in the Sapling pool. And then the coins most recently with Network Upgrade 5 in early 2022. There's a new pool because of new cryptography with Halo that eliminated trusted setup. And so any coins using that cryptography are part of the Orchard pool. So you can't, you can see what goes into the orchard pool or the sapling pool or sprout pool, and you can see what comes out when it moves from like that shielded to an unshielded to a transparent address. But there's no way to see like what happens within it. So people are concerned, is there a possibility for kind of counterfeiting in a given pool without anybody noticing that that's the case, and just kind of gradually bleeding that money out of, taking that money out of that pool. And nobody's in the wiser. And then all of a sudden you've got how many Evercoins instead of the 21 million, which is this kind of sacrosanct thing. So one of the things that was, or a thing that was done back in 2019, was to implement something called turnstiles. And so the turnstile is put on a given pool. And what it means is that no more ZEC can go into the pool than comes out of the pool, or can come out of the pool that goes into the pool. So if 1,000 ZEC go into the orchard pool now, there's no way to withdraw 1,001 tokens. So what that means is that the total supply is protected. So while you can't run a report or run a script that tells you, you know, this is the audited amount within a given pool, that you can, you the total supply, it's impossible in the consensus rules to be able to inflate that that tool or that pool, but, and take more money out of it than. Then could go in. The criticism of that is that has been that, you know, good actors might get stuck in the pool. So let's say somebody goes in and they are able to counterfeit and they try to take out 1,001 coins. That doesn't work, but they take out 1,000 coins, and they, the person that, you know, somebody else has put in 10 coins into that pool. Well, now the max 1,000 went into the pool, 1,000 went out of the pool. Somebody still got 10 coins in the pool. They can't take their money out. And they're a good actor. And so that's the criticism, and that's kind of the trade-off of those turnstiles. That said, like, we've not seen any evidence of anyone even attempting or even getting close to attempting to try to take more out of a pool than it's put in. So again, like, total supply is protected. But yeah, today with today's cryptography, maybe there'll be a way to do it in the future, using some other kind of zero knowledge method to be able to do that. But today there's no way to directly audit the, a given pool.
Is privacy ultimately a feature? Meaning, could you bolt it on to Ethereum? Or for best in class privacy, do you need your own layer one blockchain like Zcash?
Yeah, so we've heard of this a lot too. There was like a very prominent VC out in the community that was kind of throwing this FUD around and saying privacy is a feature. And the intent with it was not honest dialogue, in my opinion. The intent with it was to try to fund the coin so you could short it. But the couple things. One, like we already talked about, like, privacy isn't binary. So can you add privacy to other things? Yes, you can add privacy to other things. Are there trade-offs related to where you choose to add it versus, you know, you're choosing to add it in L2 versus L1? Yep, there are trade-offs in terms of data leakages, kind of different challenges that you have. So it's not like a simple, like, does privacy have to live at L1? Like, in order for it to be like perfectly private or whatever, or good enough private, there may be solutions that are good enough private that are kind of in different places. But you also have this challenge again, like with, and maybe this is an oversimplification, but forgive me. So like, I have like, you know, in the past, you're kind of dealing with like legacy building legacy software, and you deal kind of multiple tiers of legacy software where you have a UI, you maybe have this kind of business layer, you have a database layer and that kind of thing. So if you're encrypting information at the UI layer, then anything that's interacting with this business layer can see that information. So the information can easily be stolen, right? Or used or manipulated or whatever. Likewise, if you encrypt there and you encrypt at that business layer, but you don't encrypt at the database layer, then anybody that has access to the database has access to kind of full visibility to everything that happens on the database. It becomes a honeypot for information. So that's same with different kind of layering in the kind of crypto ecosystem. So some mechanisms are to provide encryption at layer two and then settle at layer one. Well, the batch of settlements of things on layer one still leaks information. So if you don't want that information to leak, then it needs to be encrypted at L1. It can't just be encrypted at L2. But maybe for that particular use case, somebody doesn't care. If we're talking about a global monetary system that, you know, people around the world can use and be protected from, you know, state actors and others, then I do believe it needs to be protected at the base layer in order to maximize protections for people. And it kind of goes back to this consent where at that level of kind of interaction, it becomes too difficult, too much of a kind of mental headwinds to try to have to think, what is this, you know, is this leaking my information in some way at L1? No, you want to know that it's encrypted all the way down the stack.
And do you think that understanding of like the trade-off, right? Like there are trade-offs from using like a layer two privacy solution, from using, you know, a Mixer or, you know, a layer one privacy solution like Zcash. Do you think that organizations building these things have somewhat of an obligation to kind of tell their users about these different trade-offs? Like, how do you foresee this system playing out when a layer two privacy solution on Ethereum tells all of its users, this is just as good as like Zcash at a layer one level, in terms of like your privacy set or, you know, your security within your transaction? Me saying that as someone who's not completely confident on that being one correct or wrong, but I just want to understand, like, if the builders of these solutions clearly understand the trade-offs, how much of that do they need to articulate to their users and the people, you know, using these technologies?
Yeah, I believe they have an ethical obligation to articulate that, both to their, you know, whether their users are, you know, end users of the system, you know, everyday normies that are maybe using this as a financial system, or whether they're, you know, other developers. I think that there's an ethical obligation. And I also believe that there should be better standards in the industry. Like, I have this belief that I think at some point we ought to have third-party auditing firms or folks like that that are able to do that as a benefit to humanity and the broader community, to be able to kind of assess how these technologies are protecting people's privacy, ultimately their right to consent, and to be able to publish that so that it's visible. So that kind of thing would help drive, I think, accountability, kind of get rid of some of the BS in the market, because people use this like BS marketing terms to talk about perfect privacy and that provides privacy, and people don't really understand. And I think that would go a long way for kind of credibility within the industry to kind of weed out some bad actors that way.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's shift the focus to Chainspam. How, from a high level, what has been done to kind of combat this notion that the Zcash blockchain is currently being attacked by someone increasing the size of the blockchain by running a high number of transactions? And how has that kind of affected everyday user experience? And what is being, you know, done to mitigate all of these things?
Yeah. So some background, so a little additional color to what you just said, right? So this started in like July, August of 2022. And it's very cheap to send Zcash transactions, regardless of the transaction, the makeup of the transaction. So you know, the size or the complexity. And by complexity, I mean, like, you can have a transaction that has a lot of UTXO or a lot of outputs. And so somebody figured out that they could run, and I don't know if this was their motive. I don't know what their motive is. I don't know who it is. Nobody knows who it is. But the transaction volume had increased at that time, and it does not appear to be kind of natural causes. It's what we've been calling kind of a sandblasting attack, where this certain kind of transaction type has been hitting originally the orchard shielded pool, and then but now the sapling. It was kind of more efficient to hit sapling in order to kind of try to clog the network and to be able to do it with a few bucks a day. So I would argue still ultimately, like, what they're doing is annoying. Zcash, like, hasn't gone down. The protocol works. It works as intended, all of that kind of stuff. They'd be better off, like, using that money to go buy a cup of coffee or buying their kid a milkshake or whatever it is that they're, you know, but they are getting some kind of kick out of doing this, it appears. So, like, what can be done to limit people's desire to clog the network? Because it's a free and open network. Anybody can use it, right? And it's working. Again, it's working as designed. People are, regardless, we call it an attack. Somebody's using it in the way that it's out there. And so it's totally a valid use case, what they're doing. So there's a couple of things that we want to kind of incent good behavior on the network. So one is to work on different improvements to syncing mechanisms. So there's a couple projects that have already done some stuff there with a couple wallets, Y Wallet and Zek Wallet. And those, again, this is for shielded transactions where we're seeing this performance issue. We're seeing this kind of clogging of the network, but it also has the impact of increasing the size of the chain at a faster rate than we've seen in the past. So the syncing mechanism, some other third parties have been working on, and then we've been working on one for our SDK, and there's a number of wallets like Nighthawk and Edge and Unstoppable that use our SDK. And so once we get our SDK kind of optimized, we'll get that out there. It should be early part of this year, making great progress on it, using something called DAG Sync. And hopefully that will take care of some stuff. And then the other thing is just this conversation the community's had around fees and different kind of fee mechanisms, so that if someone wants to run these kinds of transactions, it would cost them more money. So it wouldn't necessarily stop, like, if it's a state actor, like we've been talking about, you know, a government wanting to cause trouble, they're just going to pony up more money. And so we're not talking about a milkshake for their kid. We're talking about, you know, some real funds that they would have to put to work. But again, looking at these fee mechanisms, one of which is targeted for the kind of the next release. So I would anticipate, I don't want to put a date out there, but very, very soon, within weeks, not months of getting that out there, that then hopefully, you know, make this a more expensive, kind of activity for whoever's running through these kinds of transactions.
Okay. Last question around the larger FUD topics that we have listed here. We have some smaller ones that we can maybe do speed run through at the end as we're kind of approaching an hour here. The last one is Zcash. I've heard this a couple times, so I'm going to articulate on the specific question that was asked. The question that was asked was, like, Zcash is a lack of cypherpunk ethos, so it means that it can't be trusted. I believe when people are talking about that, from my perspective, they're talking about having a dev fund and those being the primary builders and developers on Zcash. And because of the dev fund and because of having business entities, it means that the Zcash protocol itself cannot be trusted and it does not have any cypherpunk ethos. I obviously disagree with that and want to kind of give you a chance to kind of elaborate on that, because it's not something that's put out there a lot, but it is something I hear, you know, when I'm out and about talking about these kinds of things with people. So I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, so for me, that's like a bunch of self-righteous bunk, right? It's like the if it's like if the idea that cypherpunkism like has something to do with whether or not somebody is able to do it full time because they get paid for it, I don't, I've been around for a while. I don't agree with that kind of definition of cypherpunk at all. Like the values that we're fighting for in terms of our freedoms and what many of us have put at stake in order to participate, whether it's money or reputation or whatever, and that we're active, we're not out there trolling, we're out building. And for people to kind of come in and troll and question those motives, because I know the people that are in the trenches and I know the stress, I know the hard work. I know the alignment with mission and where people's hearts are. That's cypherpunk to the core. The other criticism is just, again, it's like self-righteous trolling. And unless they're kind of out there building or contributing, and even if they are, like, suggest they get a different pastime because it's just a freaking waste of time. And it's not the kind of people that I would surround myself with. So I know there's been like other questions about because there's like this been related FUD that ECC is a company and therefore, potentially kind of extracting and is in the kind of self-interest of the shareholders. Back in 2018, the initial there were initial shareholders. There's total investment of about $3 million or something like that from a number of angels. And 2018, all of those investors donated 100% of their shares to a new 501c3 called Bootstrap. So Bootstrap ECC is a wholly owned by Bootstrap. None of those folks are involved with the project or have any kind of economic stake in the project. So if that's the concern, as a legitimate concern, I don't see that as like a cypherpunky concern. I think that's a concern about whether there's good incentive alignment. We've already kind of talked about the funding model, but we effectively run as a public charity, and not something that's going to benefit any kind of shareholders. We're aligned with the ECC or with the Zcash community. And then there were some others, call outs related to the grants program and the challenges with the grants program. Some people submitting grants didn't want to have to reveal their identity. And under the regulatory constraints the foundation is under, which the grants program is kind of tied to from legally, had to enforce some of that stuff. So I would actually prefer that, like my own preference is like that whole grants program moves to a different jurisdiction and is untethered to the Zcash Foundation, and that the Zcash community chooses to fund what's necessary to make that untethering happen, to be able to set that up, and that it would be set up in such a way that it would allow for grants to people that want to contribute to the project independent of their disclosing their true identity. 100% supportive of that. Again, that's a personal opinion, not necessarily like an ECC position at all. So don't know if that answers your question,
It
but like
does,
I have a hard time with the kind of name calling kind of stuff. But
it does, and I want to voice that I agree with what you said there. Have a similar opinion, personal opinion, with regards to community grants program. And honestly, I would agree. Like, I feel that people, if that's their prerogative, to call the builders of Zcash not cypherpunk because of a very unique funding structure that has delivered a lot of amazing things to, the crypto and privacy communities as a whole, then that's completely fine. You can do that. I don't care. I've got better things to worry about with my time as well. So let's go through these last little bit here because I do want to give people a chance. I mean, the people who did, put some time to ask in like individual questions, I want to give them to have the opportunity to have these answered. So let's just kind of go through these pretty quickly. I mean, plans to have a usable wallet with good UX in the future.
We're both working on a wallet that we will make available externally, and usability is a huge piece of that in terms of or trying to build, some of the other wallet providers out there are also doing some really interesting things with user experience and testing some things like you're not exposed to your seed phrase with Edge, for example. So there's a lot that will not be invented at ECC, and hopefully there's a lot of really cool groundbreaking UX that's not invented at ECC that folks deliver. But I think it's just a kind of where we're at, the evolution of the project. It'll evolve pretty fast, I think.
Okay, cool. When is the Zcash, the next Zcash halving date?
November 2024.
And
currently it's based on a block, but it's kind of regular, you know, it's based on the timing. I think it's November 19th is the current date.
Okay. With the next being 2024.
In 2024. Yeah.
Okay. When is the launch of ZSAs? I know this is a fun one because ECC is not building, or working on ZSAs actively.
Yeah. I have no idea. That's being completely developed and designed and run by an organization called Kedit that was funded by the community. I'm really interested and curious and excited to see that come to life. I love that kind of we're getting these new development shops that are kind of jumping in with both feet into the Zcash ecosystem. That's super cool. I know they publish like monthly updates, largely kind of, they're pretty technical, I think, out on the forum. But I have no real knowledge of when that is really going to be ready to go. I don't know.
And I think the big thing too is like Balaji and Ryan Selkis just did a podcast together. They're talking about the future of crypto, and Balaji specifically mentioned like something called a ZRC20, which I believe now basically kind of very similar. I think he was kind of referring to ZSA development. And I think just because there's so many things going on in the community, when, you know, this idea was mentioned, and now for us to like go out and say, like, from an ECC perspective, like, oh yeah, someone else, like, you know, there's a lot of teams building on Zcash now, any other development arm is taking that on. I think it one is negative because there's a perception that ECC is, you know, doing most of the development, but I think it's positive because it kind of reminds people that Zcash is in fact decentralizing, tons of cool stuff coming out of the foundation, tons of cool research coming out of the foundation, and that there are other third-party development arms. So I think that's like a, you know, relatively good reminder. When that does get brought up, we can, you know, remind the community that, you know, another organization's building it.
Yeah. You know, one thing about that too is like when I started at ECC, I started at ECC about 5 years ago, and like it was pretty easy for me to keep up on all the things that were happening. Like big things were happening, but not like the ecosystem in terms of the number of contributors wasn't as broad. I can't keep up anymore. So when I say like, I don't know, like the Kedit stuff that they're doing with ZSA is super cool and a big thing, but there's no time to kind of keep up with all these different pieces. I know you do a great job of doing it, like documenting and putting that stuff out there.
It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's great. It's great. It's a good problem.
Yeah. Cool. Is proof of stake going to happen? When is proof of stake going to happen? And when is this question was kind of like bringing two things together, proof of stake and cold wallet support for things like transactions and staking and earning Zcash in the proof of stake system. So I think that can be kind of contextualized into a broader question is like, is proof of stake happening? When is it happening? Kind of what's the update there and how should people kind of
think that? So good qualifier, right? Like if, because it's still if. Like we believe that it should happen, and we've published blog posts and a roadmap that is inclusive of that and then pushes about 3 years out or so to get some form of it that we think is possible on our current trajectory. And we'll probably provide an update. We're going to provide an update to the roadmap here pretty quick, because we'll continually update that roadmap as we go along, you know, every 3-4 months or so. So the question is first if proof of stake, because I think we've seen broad support for it across the community. I'd be surprised if we don't end up there, but that's still a conversation. And then it's still a conversation, like it's not just this when you say proof of stake, and we talk about a proof of stake in interoperability. there's decisions as to, you know, the kind of the underlying technology or platform. So like we've talked, you know, historically a lot about Tendermint. There's some, you know, potential other options to be able to build on. People have differences of opinion. There's different trade-offs in some of these platforms. We think a platform at DCC like a Tendermint might help us accelerate the schedule versus a, you know, trying to build our own, which would take a longer time. But so those community conversations still have to happen. So we think it could be done within 3 years. But that's more of a kind of a community kind of conversation in a governance question than it is kind of maybe a technology one. It just depends on the on what's like with it, you know, the tech that's selected.
Okay. And then with regards specifically.
Just one thing I was going to add real quick. I don't know if we have show notes or anything like that, but there's a presentation that Nathan Wilcox, our chief research officer, did at ZCon, kind of outlining some of the open questions for the community as it relates to proof of stake and different technologies. So if you're interested in that, I'd check out that session.
Yeah, it was a really good talk. I remember talking about it a few months ago. I really enjoyed it, so I'd recommend that as well. And then cold wallet support, I know that's something people in the community have been, you know, wanting for, you know, a while, is, and I believe it's, you know, from Zuko's recent comments that it's kind of this race now between Ledger and Trezor, who's going to add, you know, Zcash shielded support onto a cold wallet, which would,
on the hardware wallets. I don't know who's going to get there first. I will be shocked and disappointed if both, not just one, but both Ledger and Trezor don't support shielded Zcash by the end of 2023. I'd be surprised and disappointed. I think, you know, ultimately, like, those aren't things that we're working on. Again, like, when we talk about the broader community, like Zondax have been working on some of the stuff related to Ledger. There's conversations about whether or not it could be hooked to something like Zec Wallet or some other wallet in order to be able to support the UX on the front end. Getting on Ledger Live will take a little bit more work. And I think it needs to be out there a little bit longer before that happens. But like, hooking it to an existing wallet would be totally fine. And then I know, like, Trezor has been very heavily kind of updating the repo and posting some updates and things like that. So people are working hard on it. And so I think it's just a matter of time. It's going to be super cool. I can't wait.
No, I agree. No. Same.
We've got a Trezor device just sitting here waiting on them to get done in order to put stuff on. And then we've got really good friends over at Ledger that are on the inside that are really pushing hard to make it happen sooner than later.
Sure. Yeah, totally agree. Last question from the list. Optional privacy means, or this is a statement, so this wasn't like worded as a question. Maybe this is what the person who wrote this believes. I'm not sure. Optional privacy means governments will just ban shielded transactions.
I've heard people say that. Like, I don't understand what they're thinking. So, like, how are they going to do that? I was reading, I think it was Nepal. I saw a post for, like, Nepal is trying to get ISPs to ban any interaction with that has to do with crypto. I don't know if that means any exchanges or stuff like that, to try to, like, force out crypto out of Nepal, just to flat out ban everything. And that's not just talking about Zcash, but like, it's still surviving and living in Nepal, right? People are still accessing crypto, even though it's banned. You know, Zcash is an open protocol and people run nodes and it's permissionless and it's not, you know, government has no control. Cats, you know, it's out of the box. So there are, and the types of transactions, right, optional and private, is baked into the protocol. So that's also permissionless. So there's not a mechanism to, like, block somehow people from using shielded transactions. So I don't even know what they're thinking or how that would work. Now, they might ban Zec from, like, regulated exchanges. So we've seen that happen. You know, that's either kind of flat out bans or de facto bans in Korea, Japan, Australia, some places like that. And some of that censorship happens at the exchange. Some of it happens through payment rails and payment providers. It's a little bit more sneaky. So that make it more difficult to access ZEC in some of those locations. But we need, you know, we need better kind of DeFi tools and decentralized exchanges and other mechanisms for being, for people to be able to access ZEC in those countries. But that's part of what we're fighting for day in and day out.
Awesome. I am glad that we could, you know, work through all of these. And I think there was a lot of good information that we covered throughout this conversation. I think we got to dive in a little bit deeper into some of the topics, provide a little bit more color. Sorry that the format was a little bit more rigid. Just wanted to kind of ask these questions as closely to how they were written out. Over the course of, you know, the last hour and 15 minutes we've been talking, is there anything that we didn't discuss that you wish we would have discussed? Maybe we could talk about that really quickly, or perhaps do that over another episode. Was there anything you think that we left there?
No, I think those are a lot of the big things. I mean, I'm surprised like trusted setup didn't come up, because that's been like a question for a long time. And kind of people misunderstand even what trusted setup is, or like what the implications are. That has to do with that question about, you know, the 21 million and the auditability. You know, there's that kind of question of, you know, maybe it's just because it's like not an issue anymore, or should, like there was no more trusted setup after network upgrade 5, after the Orchard pool, though there are still funds and, you know, Sapling was still, you know, used set, trusted setup. So, but yeah, I'm glad that's like not top of mind for folks, right? Because it shouldn't be anymore.
I think it was linked into a tweet. I had someone from the Monero community had a tweet about that. But because of Orchard, I think now that the conversations, because I follow a few people in the Monero community, so I sometimes see the Zcash FUD conversations going on in their circles. It seems to be now that the trusted setup conversation is extremely minimal due to Orchard, and that is becoming like much less of a concern. And now they're not trying anything specifically. I believe for most people, I don't think most people have like particularly horrible intentions, but the conversations these communities are having are more focused on a lot of the topics we discussed earlier because of Orchard and because of, you know, the lack of dependency on a trusted setup for Orchard.
Yeah. Cool. Well, these are like, thanks for doing this. These are great questions. Like I know we need to do this more. If this is helpful, I don't know if it's helpful. Maybe it like spawns more criticism, who knows, but it's good to go through these. And I think it's good to kind of, at least provide some clarity as to kind of how we're thinking about some of these questions that are asked, which are great questions.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I feel like over the course of, you know, the next, you know, I think year to 2 years, I think there's a lot more even independent money going into media arms and different organizations about Zcash. I mean, specifically Zcash Media had a really big year in 2022. And I'm hoping that they'll come back and try to be, you know, receive either additional funding and come back into the community in 2023 for different projects. And then also there's another Zcash podcast on the Digital Cash Network. So I feel like there's going to be a lot of really great information coming to that as well. So yeah, I'm excited to see more media pop up in the Zcash community, from independent entities. And yeah, I guess the last, clarification, we both work at ECC, but this podcast is going to be being published to a community channel called Zec Hub, which is a independent, you know, media organization within Zcash, and that's where it's going to be published. So in case anyone has confusion there, but yeah, Josh, thank you so much for the time today and was glad that we could have this conversation.
Yeah. Thanks, Ian. Super fun.